The wheel of time turns, and ages come and pass, leaving memories that become legend. Legend fades to myth, and even myth is long forgotten when the age that gave it birth comes again. In one age, called the Third Age by some, an age yet to come, an age long past, a married couple decided to start a podcast.
This is Shade of My Heart, a Wheel of Time podcast. I'm Josh, and this is my wife, Kat.
Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas! And the first season has completed of the Wheel of Time TV show.
Yes.
We have seen all of the episodes. We've watched, I think, all of them at least twice.
I think so.
We just watched episode 8.
Episode 8, The Eye of the World.
Which is the title of the first book of the series.
Yep.
Let's just start with the elephant in the room. The season one TV shows has taken a lot of different liberties and different routes with the source material. This episode probably took some of the biggest changes in the show. Do you think that's fair to say?
I think that's fair to say. I mean, there's definitely, like, there's been differences in every episode, but I think you're right. This is the biggest difference one or whatever. I feel like we need to just, like, really go for it because, oh no, I lost all my notes. That stinks. Yeah, because this was going to be a long episode for us. We just got to dive in, start at the beginning.
Okay.
Flashback
was really interesting.
I loved hearing the old tongue. That was fun.
Hearing the old tongue spoken like that was awesome. Big props to those actors for learning how to say all those words in the old tongue and emoting while they're speaking, what is to them gibberish.
Right.
They're able to emote, and you can kind of still feel what they're doing.
Yeah, I thought they were fantastic. I loved them. They did a good job.
It's interesting having the head of the female Aes Sedai being referred to as the Tomerlan seat.
Yeah, I don't know that that really means anything. I think it's just like it's changed over 3,000 years.
Yeah. But it's interesting that even back in the Age of Legends, there was like a head of the female Aes Sedai.
Oh, right. Okay, yeah.
And it seemed by their conversation that he was like the head of the male Aes Sedai.
Mm-hmm.
He was speaking for all the men and she was speaking for all the women.
Yeah, I liked his dragon pin.
Yeah.
Kind of let you know right away, if you know what you're looking at, that he's the dragon.
And she calls him Dragon Reborn.
Mm-hmm.
Luz Theron was a famous and very powerful man in the Age of Legends. The books refer to the Hall of the Servants as the head of the where the Aes Sedai were, and that Luz Theron tried...
Right, because Aes Sedai means servant of all.
Yeah. Right. And so the books do refer to this effort to get the women to join Luz Theron in the final assault, and they don't do it. I don't mind, I guess, that the show kind of made that a one-on-one thing, whereas in the books it didn't seem to be so much a one-on-one thing. It was more of them as a group, the women just saying, no, we're not going to go with
you. Yeah, I kind of read this as, or watched this as, she's gotten a consensus, you know, like, that she's talked to everybody and they aren't going to do it.
Yeah.
But, I think I was expecting to see Luz Theron in today's episode, but I was expecting to see a very different scene. I thought we would see the prologue from The Eye of the World.
Right.
But that's okay. This was good because I think it showed where we're going. Like, he sealed the Dark One in that moment. And so you see that later, of course, when Rand is at the Eye and he's like, sees Luz Theron, you know, sort of.
I'm expecting we're going to see a lot more of Luz Theron in future seasons.
I think so too, yeah. I thought it was funny when he sees the Dark One, or who he thinks is the Dark One with the red eyes, you know, and then when he turns into himself bearded, and he's like, you look nothing like him. And it's like, yeah, he really didn't look anything like him. He's got this fair-haired, light-skinned, gray-eyed redhead, and Luz Theron was like a black guy
Yeah.
Dark skin, dark eyes, dark hair.
Yeah.
That was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I liked the opening.
Yep. I liked getting a look at the Age of Legends with the yes. crazy stuff flying around and the giant buildings.
Oh, yeah. And it's the same... I think that those are the same buildings as the ruins that you see. Like, if you go to the website and you look at the Age of Legends, that picture, that's the same ruins.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
So you get a sense that the Age of Legends really was a very... Actually, have they said those words? I don't think they've said those words, Age of Legends, in the show. I don't think so.
No, I think she did today when she was talking about the Sa'ang Real.
Did they?
I think so. Yeah, before the Age of Legends or... Well, anyway, I don't know.
The Age of Legends is what the current Third Age people call the time before the breaking. And that time did not call themselves Age of Legends.
Right.
That would be a little presumptuous, probably.
Yeah. Okay, so then we go to the Blight, where we see Moraine and Rand on their trek.
Yeah. And throughout the episode, we kind of flash back and forth between them and then the other characters doing different stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But let's just kind of hang out on Moraine and Rand for a minute. I thought their interactions in the Blight were interesting because you see him, he's really asking legitimate questions like, what am I supposed to do?
What is the actual plan?
What are you expecting of
me? Well, at the very beginning, she's like, the Blight can kill... boys who are in over their head. It's like, oh, okay, cool, thanks. So,
and then, like, she doesn't really give him clear guidance on, like, what am I doing here exactly?
Yeah.
I'm just... But the thing is, she doesn't know.
That's true.
But
she doesn't want to show her ignorance.
Because she's Moraine and she's got pride, she's not going to say, yeah, I honestly don't know what's about to happen at all. I have no idea what's about to happen.
Yep.
And,
I do wish, so something that I missed, when he asked her, can you teach me to channel? And she just says, no, because the closer you get to the one power, the more madness or whatever. And I was like, this would have been such a good opportunity to talk about the difference between Sidar and Sidene.
Yeah.
So
birds teaching fish to fly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'd be like a bird teaching a fish to fly. So we've talked about this before in our pre-episodes before the TV show about that there's two different halves of the power, which is what that yin and yang type of thing is representing that you see at the end. So, like, anyway, so there's Sidene and Sidar, and Sidene, which is the male half, can only be touched by men. Sidar can only be touched by women. And you even hear that the Tamerlan seat at the beginning of the episode, she says something about your power to him, the subtitles, but the word, you hear her say Sidene.
Yeah, I noticed.
So
that,
like,
yeah.
It is a thing. So I don't understand why we couldn't have had that explanation there. I think that would be a really good place to have that cool line about the birds and the fish.
Yeah, because it's a line from the books that they say multiple times that women and men do not channel in the same way. The way that they form their weaves is different. The way that they seize the power is different.
Yeah.
Everything's different. So
I just missed that.
They can't teach each other at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, I missed that too. I hope we get more of, I guess you could say, the technical side of channeling in future seasons.
Yeah. Okay, so what else about that part? Anything? Or should we
go back?
No,
their interactions I think are pretty interesting because he is not content with her vague non-answers.
Right.
He keeps trying to push
freaky deaky dream.
Yeah. Before we get to the dream though, I want to say something else about this. He, I think more than any of the other Emmons Fielders, pushes back on her.
And this is very evident in this episode.
Yeah. I mean,
Nynaeve
is openly hostile to her.
Right, right.
Rand isn't openly hostile, but he clearly is not willing to just go with whatever she says. He's not sure if she really has his best interest at heart.
Yep.
And so I thought that was an interesting dynamic. But he doesn't, like, hate her. He's just not really, he's trying to learn, and she's so withholding with her,
really annoying
with her stuff. Yeah, it is.
I think there's a lot of, see, I think that this Moraine is more ignorant than Book Moraine. Yeah. I think Book Moraine knows more, and Show Moraine is not as sure.
But she's prideful, and so she always wants to seem more sure than she really is, which always just makes her come across as mysterious and withholding. We get an interesting interaction where Egwene and Perrin talk.
Yeah, I thought that was a sweet.
Yeah, they kind of make up for the weird interaction that
and
they had last week.
And there wasn't, like, we didn't lean into the love triangle, which was good.
Yeah.
Or at least, in my opinion, it was good.
Yeah. Egwene is all ready to follow.
She's ready to go out there and do it.
And I appreciate Perrin's characterization, I think, is pretty consistent with, he's very practical. He's like, we couldn't find him. The Blight will kill us.
Yeah, he doesn't jump into things. And it was like the same character that you see in the books. If he thinks about stuff, he doesn't rush in. That's not his style.
Yeah. So I thought that was good.
Yeah. And so we can kind of stay there a minute. I loved, probably my favorite thing in this episode was the Lan and Nynaeve moment.
Yeah.
Nynaeve is so prideful. So I really liked that she's like, listen, actually, it wasn't you that I tracked. It was actually Moraine. Because, you know, I don't know. That's not in the books, but I liked that. Just that she was like, okay, I'm going to have to swallow my pride here and tell him the truth. I wish they would have told us what the tell was for Moraine that she gives him, but I guess they want to hide that from us for now, or maybe forever, who knows. But then there's that line straight from the book where he says to her, I will hate the man you choose because he isn't me, and I will love him if he makes you happy or if he makes you smile or something like that.
Yeah, it's very clear, I wish I could be your warder, I wish I could be your man, but I can't.
Yeah, it's sweet. And that thing too that she says, and I guess in the book she says a wisdom seldom marries.
Yeah.
But if I go to Tar Valon, maybe I'll be something else. Of course, then he says, well, an Aes Sedai marries just as seldom as a wisdom. But in this, they're saying that wisdom never marries. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like that touch. I really like the relationship between Lan and Nynaeve in the show much better.
Oh yeah.
Than the books so far.
Much better.
That's a change that I'm loving.
Yeah. The show has definitely portrayed their love in a much more believable way than in the books. In the books, I really feel like it comes out of left
field. Just like all of a sudden.
But that's kind of how Robert Jordan wrote love stories for the most part, is that you have two characters, they don't seem to really care much about each other, and then all of a sudden they're madly in love.
Yeah. Very confusing. But I like that. I do really enjoy what they're doing with the romances so far.
Yeah, that's been good. The Eye of the World is
super different. Super from the different. Books.
In the books, it's, you can't even get there like on purpose because it's always in a different place.
And that makes me, okay, so something that will tell you, this is a total, if you read the books, I definitely recommend it. You've got a year, read Eye of the World if you can, listen to it on Audible or from your local library. If you haven't already, but there's this guy, the Green Man, and I love the Green Man. It's such a beautiful thing, and he's at the Eye.
Yeah. He guards the Eye. He tends like a garden in the Blight.
It's really
cool.
Where
the Blight can't get in because of his power. And honestly, of all the things in the book, the Eye of the World moving around and what in the world the Eye of the World is one of the most mysterious things.
That's true.
It never does really make complete sense in canon. Like, what are the dynamics of that?
Yeah.
So I think the solution that the show came up with is a lot more simple.
Yeah.
And
more practical. It makes sense.
I do hope that the show at some point brings in Shael Ghul,
which, in the books, that's
actually where the Dark One's prison is.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like in a big volcano, deep in the Blight.
Yeah.
Actually, it's not even in the Blight. It's beyond the Blight in mm-hmm. the blasted lands where, like, nothing can grow. And this, Moraine talks about the Eye of the World. Like, that's Sheol Ghul.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's where the Dark One's prison is. So, I don't know. I'd like them to actually have the actual Blight and the
Sheol Ghul.
The Sheol Ghul, yeah. I mean, yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
But we'll
so,
see.
Okay, so we'll talk about another deviation from the books real quick. We may have touched on this last time, but difference from the book, since I feel like that's what we do a lot of, is just talking about the differences. In the books, the entire party goes into the Blight.
Yep.
And they're on their horses, and there is all that stuff with, like, don't touch anything. It's rot. It'll consume you. So I did like the, I liked that they saw that guy all, like, covered with moss and, like, that the Blight had consumed him, sort of, because it showed that from the book.
Yeah.
But it is a difference that they're not on horseback. They don't all go. It's just the two of them.
This Blight is definitely more jungle.
Yeah, yeah. But I think this was fine because even in the book, Rand is like the only one that does anything at the eye. Like, everybody else either gets knocked out or they go and hide or whatever. So
yeah.
I was okay with that too.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Lan did need to be there for her eventually. So, and then we did get that moment of Lan seeing Malkier. We talked about
Seven Towers.
The Seven Towers. Moiraine shows it to Rand, and then you see Lan just have a moment where he sees Malkier, which we know is where he was born and his home that he never really knew, his kingdom that he can't rule. So that was neat. But yeah.
We have Moiraine have an interaction with Ishamael. That's the bearded guy.
Yeah, if you pause it and you can see his name. There, the character name is Ishamael.
She calls him the Dark One, and Rand thinks he's the Dark One.
Right.
Which is actually consistent in the books.
Yep.
The one that they think is the Dark One is actually one of the Forsaken named Ishamael.
And Stepan mentioned him. That Ishamael is the father of lies. Or
I don't feel like we're spoiling, because if you just pause it during the scene on Amazon Prime, it says his name is Ishamael.
Yeah, they didn't name him as the Dark One. They named him as Ishamael.
Yeah. Even though they don't say it in the show.
Yeah, because they don't know. But as a viewer, we do.
Yeah.
And that battle was extremely different. Ishamael wasn't even there in the book, was he? Was he one of them?
Well, do you want me to talk about what happened?
I guess we better not. We'll just say that battle at the Eye was
completely different.
Like, almost nothing was the same.
Nothing at all the same. But I actually like this.
I liked it. I was fine.
In the show, it was this showing him an alternate reality that he could have. And if he serves Ishamael and does what he says, he can remake the world in his image.
I liked it that I feel like Rand sort of manipulated Ishamael into teaching him a little bit of channeling.
Yeah. Well, I appreciated how Rand rationalized.
Yeah.
He was like, the woman that I love doesn't want this life.
Yeah.
And so I'm not going to do this.
And that was sacrificial, cool. Which
we
go back to that hero's journey.
Mm-hmm.
Your hero has to make a sacrifice. He could have chosen to do something but he would have lived his whole life knowing that he was, like, forcing it.
Right. Yeah, I like that. That was cool.
I did too. Yeah, I thought that was really cool.
One thing I just wanted more. So, the Borderlanders, including the Shinarans, are like hardcore warrior culture.
Yeah.
Where, like, they live to fight Shadowspawn and to keep them out. And I felt like the army of the Shinarans didn't do much. You got their sense of duty, like they are totally willing to die. They are not afraid of death. So I appreciate that. That's consistent. But I felt like their battle prowess was just not there, not really on display much in this episode.
Yeah, I agree. I really wanted... Well, okay, so again, departure from the book, something different. So, okay, I'll say something the same. Sorry, squeaky chair. I'll say something the same first and then something different. Aglamar and Amalisa, brother and sister that rule Faldara, Amelisa is, it is talked about in the book that she is just as fierce a warrior as her brother,
Doesn't channel in the
but she
books.
doesn't channel in the books. Which that was fine. I see what they were going for, what they
Yeah.
did. But it does talk about how she is just as fierce a warrior, that she is just as bad and just as not bad, like mean, like awesome
Yeah.
and warrior. And but Agomar is considered one of the five great captains.
Yeah.
So like I agree with you, in the show, he went down too quick. Like I really wanted his character to, I was so excited when I saw that Agomar was cast, and I was like, ooh, sweet. Like he's a character that is there a long time. So I was disappointed that he dies.
Yeah, me too.
I was real disappointed at that. And Amelisa too.
And Uno.
And Uno.
Uno is he's a side character in the books.
But he's so
He's
great.
the guy with the eye patch. And he's great. He's in it to the end.
So that was really
But
sad too. I was
he
so
just went
disappointed.
down. We didn't even see him get to really fight.
I
That
know.
was
You can tell that he's like this big fighter, and like, I mean, he's got an eye patch, for goodness
It's all
sakes.
scarred. He's
Yeah.
clearly been in a lot
But
of
then a fade
battles.
just gets him. Nothing. He can't even
Yeah,
fight back.
it's terrible.
I was very disappointed with Uno's death. So disappointed. I was really looking forward to getting to know him more.
And Perrin didn't really do anything. He was mad that he wasn't going to go fight, and he never fought at all this episode.
I know. You see him struggling about the axe. So in the books, he has the axe with him all the time, and it's this constant struggle of he really doesn't like it, he hates it, he doesn't want to use it, but he doesn't in the books follow the way of the leaf or
No.
understand why they want to do that.
No.
So that's a difference too. And I'm not necessarily against it at this point that he is thinking, because of what happened with Layla, I can
Yeah.
understand him being like,
Yeah.
okay, I'll try this way of the leaf thing.
Yeah.
So you saw that struggle when he picks up the axe, but I wanted to see him do something with it. And Fain ruined that. Fain saying, oh, see, you
You push a
turned,
little bit and you go
you
to the
go to the
darkness.
dark. It's like, ah, I wanted to see him do something with, like, kill a fade. You know, that would have been awesome to see him wielding an
The
axe. And
fades were terrifying in this
oh,
episode.
yeah. Ugh.
Yeah, and this is the first time that we've really got to interact with Padd and Fain since that first
Since episode
episode.
one, yeah, that's
And
something I wish.
they in this one, Padd and Fain tells Perrin he's the one that led the Trollocs and Fades to the Two Rivers for them, and so he's definitely a dark friend. He's
And he's even like, we didn't want to kill you.
Yeah, we're trying to bring you to the Great Lord, not kill you.
Yeah, I did like that. But I will say, I wish that we would have seen Fain more throughout. There's like these
Yeah.
little baby glimpses, the blink and you miss it glimpses of him. I wish that we would have, I don't know, seen a little bit more of him, because it was kind of when he showed up in this episode. I don't know. If I had been a viewer not having read the books, I probably would have been like, what? What is that? Why is he there? Who cares? You know, I wish
Yeah.
that we would have seen a little bit more of him being nasty. You really had to like know what you were looking for or know what you were listening for to know that he'd been in those other episodes.
Yeah.
So I think it should have been a little bit more obvious, not quite so subtle. But I did like how cocky he was. I did like that. I liked him kind of strutting out of there with the two fades at
And
his
he stole the
sides.
Horn of Valyr.
Stole the Horn of Valyr. Do we want to talk about the show versus book Horn of Valyr stuff?
Yeah. So in the books, the Horn of Valyr is this legendary item that they've had many quests where people are searching for the Horn of Valyr, and there's all these legendary heroes that have sought the horn. Periodically, the city of Ilion will declare a Horn of Valyr, and everyone who
A
wants
hunt for the
to,
horn.
thank you, declare the Great Hunt for the Horn. And everyone who wants to will gather in Ilion, and they'll take the hunter's oath to be a hunter of the horn. And throughout the series, you hear about, oh, that guy's a hunter for the horn, she's a hunter for the horn. And they're always the adventuring type,
But
tough.
book two is called The Great Hunt.
Yeah. And so it's this big thing that you hear about. And Tom tells stories about the Great Hunt. And there's like a ton of different heroes that are a part of that. And then they go to the Eye of the World and they find the horn in the eye. And they're like, oh, how about that? We found it. And then when they take it back to Faldara, the Lord of Faldara, Algamar, is like, oh my goodness, the temptation for me to use it is too great. I can't handle it.
You got to take it away.
You got to take it. I don't know what to do here. And in the show, it's underneath his throne. It's like...
he knows where it's been the whole time.
It's been in Faldara the whole time.
But they haven't talked about it at all. It hasn't been, for the show anyway, it hasn't been this great hunt for the horn. There hasn't been any mention at all.
Season two is definitely going to have the great hunt, though, because the horn is now in Darkfriend hands.
Now the horn's missing, yeah.
So they're going to have to quest to get it back.
Yeah. Well, and doesn't it, the books, the same thing happens in the books, though, with Fain stealing it, yeah.
Fain steals it.
At Faldara.
In Faldara.
So we still get that. It kind of goes back to... you know, we sort of, as readers, we look at this as a different turning that we're pretty sure that it's going the same, like the same checkpoints, I would almost say. Like certain of the same things are going to happen, but they'll get there a different way. So this is kind of like, okay, Fain stole the horn from Faldara, but that all happened in a different way.
Yeah, the show is definitely simplifying a lot of things. And I, you know, it's okay. I understand. Yeah. I will say, the first time we watched it, I was really mad about the changes.
Yeah, we had to do a rewatch before we did our episode.
On the rewatch, 24 hours later, and having some time to think about it, I actually liked it a lot more than I did the first time.
I liked it
better.
Still
not my favorite episode of the season.
Agreed. It might be my least favorite, actually.
It might be, but not as terrible as I initially thought.
Good. I'm glad. Yeah, he was real mad.
Oh, one thing that... I don't really like this. So when Amelisa gets the channelers in the city...
oh, we didn't even talk about this part.
She burns all of them out, including herself. Burning out means you draw too much of the one power and you die.
So before we say the bad part, let me pause. I sort of appreciated that this was a... like we've talked about before, rather than explaining it, they showed it.
Yes.
That if you... if someone draws too much, they can burn out and die.
Yeah. And boy, did it look crazy.
It was, visually, it was really cool.
Yeah. Very freaky to see somebody's eyes burn out like that.
Yeah. And so, it was like Amelisa was forcing them to pull more because she was like, I need more. So this is different from the books. And now go ahead and say what you were going to say.
So in the show... Egwene's about to... this is... none of this was in the book. But Egwene was about to burn out and Nynaeve somehow kind of takes the hit for her.
Yeah, she like puts her arm on her and like takes her power, I think.
Yeah, even though in the book, that wouldn't even work. Right. If you were in danger of that happening to you, somebody physically touching you would do absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
Because that's not how the power and bonds
Well, and you can't
work.
Even... in a circle, you can't burn out.
No, that's exactly right.
And I will say, these girls obviously didn't really know how to do a circle properly, which I think it's cool that we saw the Aes Sedai do a circle. They did a linking.
Yeah.
And they had like this is how you do it. And then these, none of them were really trained. None of them really know what they're doing. Yeah. And you could tell the difference was like stark. They all had their arms out. They're like kind of shaking, almost seizing.
Yeah.
Whereas when the Aes Sedai did it, it was very controlled.
Yeah.
Okay, so anyway
Nynaeve takes it, and like, it looks like she burns out and dies.
Yeah, she looks just as nasty as the others.
She looks exactly like the other women that burned out
and died. Egwene even says, come back.
So Egwene's like crying over her, and like, Nynaeve is not moving.
Right.
She looks dead. Like, just real dead.
It looks like she's even doing like CPR. Like, Egwene looks like she's, like, doing chest compressions.
Kind of pumping her. Yeah.
Which, so,
I'm
like,
not sure that you could actually do a chest compression if somebody's laying on your lap.
No, you definitely can't.
You need to put them on
the
ground.
I've taken a CPR course. Yeah. You can't.
Yeah.
That's fine.
But, like, in her grief, she's crying on her, and then she heals her.
Yeah.
Now, this bothers me for two reasons. Nope, three reasons. Number one, if somebody's dead, you cannot heal them.
Can't heal death. And it's actually talked about in the
book.
Yeah,
they say it all the time. You cannot heal death.
Yeah.
Number two, if somebody is just burnt out, not dead, just burnt. Let's say she was on death's doorstep, but she wasn't quite dead.
Mm-hmm.
But she was at least burned out. Again, unhealable.
Mm-hmm.
Number three, Egwene is not a healer. And that's actually a big point in the books, is that
that's Nynaeve's
she's
thing.
Bad at healing. She can eventually heal like small things,
mm-hmm.
but she's not very good at it. That's Nynaeve's thing. Nynaeve is the great healer that can heal all kinds of stuff, but Egwene is admittedly not great at it. So I didn't like that part.
Yeah, even if they just would have done it the opposite way.
Yeah.
That Egwene, well, still the whole like,
don't make her die.
Yeah, they should have shown her like struggling or something.
Yeah. I it just felt so unnecessary.
Yeah, it was, I didn't like that either. But yeah. Right, like what was even the point of that? You could have just, well, and maybe we'll find out. Maybe this is yet again one of those things that there is more to that story that is not from the books. It's a, you know, and that it's another change that next season we'll be like, oh, that's why they did that.
Yeah.
You know, who knows?
Who knows?
But speaking of characters who died, I think we need to talk about Loial for a second.
Yeah.
If Loial is dead, I might throw in the towel.
Yeah, Loial.
And Fane got him with the dagger from Shadow. Oh, hold on, I got to go back again.
He gets the dagger somehow.
That's the thing. That's something. If we had seen Fane get the dagger, wherever that scene is on the cutting floor, it should have been in it. I think that
because the last time we saw the dagger, Moraine did her thing.
Got it away from Matt.
But then we don't even know where like it ended up.
Right. So I think that's what it was missing.
Yeah.
Some episode somewhere should have given us that, you know, Fane, even knowing that he wanted to get it or something.
Yeah.
So that we could have gotten a glimpse of, oh, he is to be, you know, cautious.
Yeah.
But anyway, the dagger from Shadar Logoth, we know how powerful and disgusting and tainted it is. So for him to get Loial with that dagger,
yep,
something's going on. However, the second rewatch, I did notice that random guy in the bar, they did like a close-up on that random guy in the bar touching Loial's chest.
Yeah.
So I don't know if there's something weird there.
I don't know.
I was
trying to think about that, and I have no idea. That's definitely not Fane.
No, no, it's just some random. She calls him AG, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. Min does.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
But anyway,
it sure does seem like he is super dead. Which is obviously a huge departure from the books, because he's alive throughout the series in the
book. Yeah, really, the book, Loial is the one kind of telling, like writing it. You see all these, like there's always a like a line at the beginning of each chapter, and sometimes it's like written by Loial after everything. So really hope that he's, you know, I don't know, Nynaeve's gonna come up and heal him or something, which I mean, I feel like they can't kill off Loial. You just can't kill off Loial. He's so wonderful. We'll see what happens.
He looked awful dead.
So overall, like we said, for the rewatch, we ended up liking it. Again, gotta remember that this is not the same as the books, that it's a different turning, and that there's gonna be a bunch of differences. So, that being said, we can talk about the cliffhanger ending without giving any spoilers away. Those boats.
Mm.
And those crazy people.
Oh, before we get to that, Rand
going
off by himself and saying, you know, tell him I'm dead is not book accurate, but I like it.
I liked it.
I don't mind it.
I also liked that you're seeing the vulnerability of Moiraine. She can't channel right now. Ishmael has, I think he has shielded her. I think there's a difference between, we've talked about gentling men and stilling women. Think that he has shielded her so she can't touch the source, but if that shield breaks, she will be able to. So I don't know what's going to happen there.
Yeah,
but
it seems like he tied it off.
Yeah, it looked like he did with it when he did that little thing.
She can maybe break through it with time.
Maybe she'll go to that whoever the old Aes Sedai is that beat her to death before.
Maybe.
But so I really liked seeing her vulnerability when he's like, tell them I'm dead. And she's all, you know, I can't lie. And he's like, you'll figure it out. And then she does. When Lan comes and he says, where's Rand? And she just shakes her head and says he's gone. You know, she doesn't lie. He is gone. But it sure makes it seem like he's dead.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right. So then you have these crazy ships at the end, and they make this huge tidal wave.
I loved the music for them.
Yeah.
Don't do that on our show.
Sing along.
Everybody. Yeah. So they're freaky, and I'm excited to see what goes on
there. Yeah, they're invaders from over the ocean that mm-hmm. are here to mess stuff up. And they were alluded.
Girl.
Yeah, she doesn't have a shot against that that tidal wave. They were alluded to in a previous episode,
just very quickly, but, in the bathhouse.
In the bathhouse, where she
with Megan.
Megan says, "Oh, your ships are disappearing in the west. I don't know what that's about, but I'm going to go check it out."
Yeah, and then you
that
see far western shore.
That is what she was checking out. Yep. Is
these guys.
These invaders from
I'm
over the ocean.
I'm very interested to see how they go with these. I guess they're speaking another language, it sounded like, which that'll be interesting to see what happens there. Yeah, so pretty cool cliffhanger, for sure. All right, so as we wrap up, and of course the show has wrapped up until, I guess, next November.
Probably.
So our...
They haven't announced a
yeah
a date for season two, but I know that they're over halfway done filming season two.
Yeah. So we can't really recap anything next week. So the plan right now, I think, is that we are going to do some character sketches. We're going to take some characters that we've seen already in the show, and we're going to kind of flesh them out a little bit, talk about... some of the ways that they are in the book, and maybe even talk about differences in the show in the character. So the question in the show notes for you is, what character would you like us to start with? And, we'll try to get to everybody. So please, if you see that question, please answer the question, because I see all of those, and I would love to see who you want to learn more about.
I hope this podcast was helpful for you as you're enjoying the Wheel of Time TV show. I hope that we make you want to read the books, because they're amazing. Yeah. We appreciate you listening. Please like and subscribe and tell friends and everything like that.
Yeah.
We want to spread the love for the Wheel of Time.
So the next time you hear from us will be New Year's Day. So happy New Year to everyone. And I hope you have a great Christmas. Enjoy your families, and have a great week.
May you always find water and shade.